from the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report for Thursday, June 4th, 2009. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. In agricultural news, USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack may not be in step with the White House when it comes to climate change legislation. We'll have these and other stories this half hour. And Todd Gleason will give us the lowdown on old crop soybean futures. And we'll have the latest on Midwest weather from agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt. It's all on the Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Let's check how prices fared in the settlements on this Thursday afternoon in Kansas City. July wheat settled at $6.90, up 18 and a quarter. September, $7 up three quarters. $7.75 up 18 and a half. December, $7.17 and a quarter up 18 and a half. July wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade settled $6.35 and a quarter up 17 and three quarters. September, $6.63 and a quarter up 18 and a quarter. And December, $6.87 and three quarters up 18 and three quarters. July corn settled at $4.48 and a half. It was up 16. September, $4.58 and a quarter, up 15 and three quarters. December, $4.71 and a half, up 16 and a half. March of 2010, $4.81 and three quarters, up 16. May, $4.89 and a quarter, up 16 and a quarter. July beans, $12.30, up 48. August, $11.78, up 41. September, $11.15 and a half, up 36 and a half. November, $10.81 and a half, up 34 and a half. January, $10.86 and three quarters, up 34 and three quarters. July soybean meal, $3.99, up $19.50. August, $3.74.20, up $15.70. July soybean oil, $40.34, up $1.09. August, $40.50, up $1.08. June live cattle, 80.02 and a half, up 52 and a half. August, 81, up 22 and a half. August feeders, 96, up 47 and a half. And June lean hogs, 57.27 and a half, down 2 and a half on the day. And those are today's settlements from Chicago and Kansas City.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Looking at AM 580 meteorologist Ed Kieser's extended highlights, he says a west to east front will form across Illinois and Indiana and probably hover close to I-80 over the weekend. That will trigger scattered showers and thunderstorms across the northern third of the two states this weekend. The heaviest rainfall should remain near the Wisconsin border on northward. Much warmer weather is expected in central and southern sections of Illinois and Indiana over the weekend. Scattered showers and thunderstorms may pop up in a few central locations, but mostly dry weather is expected, with completely dry weather expected in the south. Early next week, cooler air may try to push southward, increasing the chance of showers and thunderstorms in central and southern sections.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on Illinois Public Media. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon, Mike.
Hey there, Dave. Thanks for not inviting us to fill in yesterday. We appreciate it.
Well, what the market took away yesterday, Mike, it gave back today, especially in corn and beans.
Yeah, it sure did. And late reports from the floor, Dave, said that the quote, the buying back, the traders were buying back everything they sold yesterday. So what you say has a lot of truth in it. You know, the fact that the dollar was unable to follow through with strength and cross above 80 on the June index, and also the idea that the bonds made new daily lows in mid-session, you know, kind of brought everything back to the traders thinking that the inflationary bias was back in the market, that the dip yesterday was that, in fact, a dip, and it was a dip to buy. Try to get as much information from the floor as possible as far as what type of funds, whether it was institutional funds, whether it was just commodity trading funds, or who exactly was coming in and buying. And from the latest reports, we got probably a mix where, again, some of the funds that sold off yesterday, their positions, they came back in and bought. There is word that some of the institutional people came in, especially in light of a Goldman Sachs report that came out predicting $85 crude oil by the end of the year on increasing demand. That's pretty stark, pretty amazing stuff to put out because we have U.S. supplies of oil about 20% above last year at this time.
Well, if the dollar is trying to adjust for inflation, and I must say the dollar pretty much ended the day where it started today, although it had it played to both sides, high and low. if it's trying to adjust for inflation, what are the downward targets that it might be looking at?
Well, last December we went down below that 78 level and got into the mid-77 level. I think that'd probably be the first place we'd be looking at for a downward target. And when we did that, when we went down to those price levels, that's when the commodity prices were falling as well. And so we do indeed have a different look in the market and a different feel in the market between the dollar and the bonds, because when those were going lower 5-6 months ago, it was on everything going lower because of the economy. The only difference here, I think, that has to be kept in mind, because this is a tough, tough year, because a lot of guys in our listening area are not only having to be flexible in the field, they're having to be flexible with their marketing and their price plan. The key here, I think, is what really drags us out of this market and allows these inflationary biases to come to fruition. In other words, economic health returns, and that demand is there to buy these higher priced goods, is the housing market and is the banking industry. When you have higher interest rates coming in the form of higher bond yields, like we have right now, and a shrinking dollar, you're really pushing on a string to keep this inflationary bias intact. So it's nice in the near term what we're facing and what we're dealing with. Yesterday may have been a one-day wonder, and we may want to go up and test some higher highs here, but I think we really have to have the stock market on our side, because if the stock market's not on our side, then all of a sudden people will probably start talking about how much buying power we're losing in the dollar, how our interest rates are going up, how our mortgage rates are going up, and then how much our credit card debt and our housing values are staying weaker, and we can't repay our loans to the bank. So I think we have to keep this in a contextual format in terms of the outside markets and those interest rates versus inflation.
Well, then, given what you said, are we potentially heading for some sort of a blow-off top in June?
I think we're getting ready for a major high in June. I mean, seasonally, that would be the case. Merrill just sent me some new data that he had worked up going back into November beans, December corn, and going back many years. June is a key high for these contracts seasonally. I think when you look at what we're dealing with in the outside markets, like in the post-trade here, since the grains have closed, bonds have made new contract lows, or I should say new 7 or 8 month lows in the June long bond, back where we were back in November, December time frame. So they're mirroring the dollar right now in terms of their price action. Interesting to note, though, like you said, the dollar has not really fallen much, and the stock market, most importantly of all, the stock market hasn't made new highs off of these new lows in the bonds. And so those are the things that we continue to watch in our analysis to say maybe it's time that we get really, really ready to go ahead and get some hedges in place for the month of June. Make no mistake about it, we will be hedging quite a bit of corn in the month of June. We'll probably finish up on our hedging of wheat in the month of June, and we'll get a good portion of our beans hedged in the month of June. We may have re-ownership underneath most of that, but we still want to lock in the profit if it presents itself.
It looks to me, as I read everything and look at the charts, that over the next couple of weeks that corn has the better of it over soybeans to the upside.
I think it does fundamentally, Dave, because it hasn't had as much premium put into it, and we don't have to worry as much about China pulling stakes and not buying it anymore. But it's interesting, the beans, and I was talking with the branches about this earlier today, the beans have really gotten a nice look to them in terms of maybe a little easier way to forecast if you're a producer and you don't have a lot of time. 1040 was the resistance in November beans. Yesterday and today made 1040 the new support line, and that's also those old January highs at 1040 level. So if you're really not into marketing heavily and you really want to just have a black and white, you know, as much black and white pivot point as you possibly can based upon prices, that 1040 level is a key pivot point. Now, if you fall back below that on a closing basis, given the fact we're going into probably the most bullish June report that we've had in several years, if you fall back below 1040 in November beans going into this report next week and into the acreage report at the end of the month, then you probably have a real turn in the market and a trend changer and a game changer, and that's where you probably want to jump on some hedges real quickly.
We've had highs in the last four sessions essentially at around the same level, 1082 or thereabouts. Do you think that 1136 is in play?
Yeah, if you can get above today's highs, there's really not a lot out there to mess with you until you get to that upper 1120, 1135 level. That's perfectly legitimate from a technician standpoint. It would make a lot of sense that we'd get there if the July and the August were leading. We noted today the bull spreads in beans were very, very strong. Not so much of that in the corn. So that the bean spreads, if they continue to lead along with the crude oil and the stock market, then the November has more upside potential to it.
I was noting that Tom Fritz of EFG was saying in his work this morning about the bean spread that it looked to him a little bit like 2004. Can you make that case?
A lot of people are talking about that, and it's interesting because I did some work for the newsletter tonight because Tom had said that this morning on a conference call as well. And there's a lot of people in Chicago that have already penciled in a 100 million bushel carryover, and that's why this spread, I think, has been so aggressively bought again. And so I looked at where we were back on May 12th, and we were right around the 1117 level in July beans. We closed here today at 1230. So we've rallied about $1.11, $1.12 since the last report. And if using our elasticity model, if you make every million bushel decrease worth about 5 cents a bushel, then we're trading right around 105 to 102 million bushel carryover right now. So his bean spread analysis and what's going on in Chicago matches up really nicely with the price premium we've put in here going into the report next week.
With the possibility of upside potential into July, I suppose.
Yeah, I think that's what everybody's thinking. But again, it goes back to we've seen the census crush report pull back demand. We've seen the last two weekly exports pull back demand. Probably one of the biggest things about today that we haven't really hit upon is we did see that 3-cargo cancellation by China. The trade was able to blow it off saying we factored this into prices. But I think in the back of their minds, Dave, I think they're starting to say to themselves, is this the beginning of a trend in China where they're not going to buy as much as they have the last few months? And I guess probably the most disappointing thing and probably the leader to the downside once again would be the wheat because of this. But we had a 9.7 million bushel weekly export sale in wheat after the dollar has fallen how many percentage points in the last 3 months? We should be selling wheat like crazy. But like the people in Chicago say, even with the weaker dollar, that Black Sea, that Northern or Eastern European wheat, it really outbids us still. And so I think if you're looking for the weak point or the part of the armor or the Achilles heel in corn, I think the weak point in the corn is the wheat market. And obviously what's going on over in the hog sector can't be good long-term in terms of demand.
And I suppose if you're a busy producer, especially in the Eastern Corn Belt where much needs to be done yet, you might also keep track of the 200-day moving average in corn?
Those were huge. huge in wheat, in the S&P, in corn, in crude oil. You know, that dollar and that S&P 500 200-day moving average are excellent leading indicators, and you can throw that 200-day moving average in the wheat, especially as it being a leader of the downside. You know, we talked about the stocks and the S&P. Wouldn't want that 200-day moving average violated in the S&P 500 at all, given what the bonds and the dollar are doing. And so what we're trying to get at here, Dave, is we hear and keep hearing these institutional investors are on the sidelines feeling like they missed the train. Yesterday brought the train back to the station. It looks like they're going to jump on the train based upon today's price action. The only thing that would pull them off the train and keep them in the station would be the dollar not falling any longer, or the bonds falling and the stocks not rallying. You know, those are the key leading indicators for me from the work we've done in terms of how investment funds, institutional investors, and commodity trading advisors, how they all think alike. If they have any similarity or any one major characteristic amongst them all, it seems to be those that we have in the market right now. So that's the best we can do for producers right now, because every acre that doesn't get planted right now, producers are telling us, hey, I'm losing money per acre that I've got to make up with the price going higher. So they're very reluctant sellers, and I can understand that. But if these outside market fundamentals turn against us, it seems like it'd be a lot like last year, where you have micro fundamentals that are friendly, but the macro outside market fundamentals have done their thing and they're ready to turn on us. So we really have to be prepared for that as the month of June goes through.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Thanks, Dave. Have a great day, sir. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
You too. Mike Zuzalo of Risk Management Commodities. He is in Lafayette, Indiana. In agricultural news, USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack has apparently gone out on a limb with his campaign to get an agriculture and forestry carbon credits program added to the climate change bill moving through Congress, with USDA named as the agency to manage it. A White House official says, quote, "The administration has not taken a position on the specifics where we want any component parts of the program to be administered." Vilsack's statements surfaced in an account of a community forum that Vilsack held last week in Kentucky. Vilsack said agriculture emits 7 to 10% of U.S. greenhouse gases, but could be as much as 25% of the solution via farming practices that prevent carbon dioxide from entering the atmosphere. Vilsack also said USDA is better suited than EPA to monitor those practices. And Vilsack added that he agreed with House Agriculture Committee Chairman Colin Peterson that calculations of the carbon footprint of ethanol should not include indirect land use. Meanwhile, top House Democrats have signaled they will not let their objections to a climate bill moving through the House slow or derail the legislation. A group of House Democrats is calling for a General Accountability Office report on former federal trade officials who have left government service and now represent foreign clients. In a letter to GAO, the group says that taxpayers made a substantial investment in the training and salaries of these individuals while they were working for the federal government, and that lobbying for foreign competitors, quote, may work against the best interests of American workers and industries. The World Health Organization reportedly is preparing to declare its first influenza pandemic in 41 years as the H1N1 flu virus continues to spread. But the Obama administration is not waiting for an official declaration before taking steps to combat the virus. The president this week asked Congress for an additional $2 billion in supplemental funds to prepare for a projected H1N1 resurgence this fall. Meanwhile, bans on U.S. pork imports by China, Russia, and more than a dozen other countries continue to baffle government and industry officials, leading some to speculate that the issue is more about market share than health concerns. The bans cost the U.S. hog industry millions of dollars every week, and they continue despite insistence by international health officials that the pork is safe and the country's hogs are not to blame for the epidemic. Dave Warner, a spokesperson for the Washington-based National Pork Producers Council, says U.S. producers have had long-standing disagreements with China and Russia. He believes the two countries could be using the H1N1 flu scare to restrict imports and give a boost to their domestic hog industries. And the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization says that world 2009-2010 wheat trade is expected to fall by 10 million metric tons due to a 4.2% drop in global production. The FAO estimates 2009-10 world wheat production will fall to 655.8 million metric tons from the record high of 684.8 million tons the previous year. However, stocks in countries expecting the largest declines in wheat production, including the U.S., Russia, and Ukraine, should be adequate to buffer the fall. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Old crop soybeans are in the driver's seat from now until the harvest season as it pertains to price in Chicago. Todd Gleason has more from the University of Illinois.
On-hand stocks of old crop soybeans, those harvested last fall, are dwindling fast, and it's expected that stocks will continue to drain away as summer fades to fall. Drain away, but not necessarily disappear, says University of Illinois Extension ag economist Daryl Good.
I think there's a limit to how low those can go. I do find it curious, though, that there is a tendency for that stocks report, the September 1 stocks report, to show a few more bushels of soybeans than anticipated based on supply and demand numbers going into that report. I just reviewed the USDA's projection of year-ending stocks 2 weeks before the stocks report comes out. And over the last 15 years, about 70% of the time, the actual stocks numbers are larger than the projected inventory. We tend to find a few soybeans in the September report, clearly not every year, and that's no guarantee we will this year. The smaller the prospects for the 2009 crop are, the more important those year-ending inventories are going to be.
Well, the nearby market, which did cross the $12 mark, is telling end users to slow down consumption, waiting for new crop harvest to refill the bins with beans.
But there is some strong incentive right now, clearly, for end users to start postponing purchases and consumption as much as possible. I mean, if I can get beans a year from now, a dollar and a half cheaper, or 2 months from now, a dollar cheaper than what I can pay for them right now, the market's trying to tell the end user, put on the brakes as much as you can.
So the Extension Ag economist says the United States will not run out of soybeans, but that rationing is beginning to happen. The question is how high the price of old crop soybeans will need to climb to make what's left last until this fall's harvest. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
It's National Frozen Yogurt Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1845, Hatch's sewing machine for wheat, oats, and other grasses was first demonstrated. The machine could sow up to 25 acres a day, and it cost just $40. In 1872, Robert Cheesbrough of New York patented a method for making Vaseline. In 1895, African-American inventor Joseph Lee patented a machine for breadcrumbing. It was intended for use by restaurants to crumb large quantities of bread scraps. In 1907, the automatic washer and dryer were introduced. And in 1936, Sylvan Goldman invented the shopping cart. He got the idea from a wooden folding chair. Wheels are placed where the bottom of the chair legs were, and in place of the chair seat, Goldman stacked two metal baskets on top of each other. At first, customers were reluctant to use the new contraption, so Goldman hired fake shoppers so customers could see just how useful the new cart could be. A few years later, Goldman came up with the shopping cart nesting design that is still in use today. And that's This Day in Agricultural History. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on Illinois Public Media. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for our look at the agricultural weather is meteorologist Peter Levitt. Good afternoon, Peter.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, the Eastern Corn Belt is in desperate need of an open planting window. Are they going to get one?
Yeah, I think so, actually. We've got two areas of precipitation. One extends from the southern Mississippi River Valley, east-northeastward, and gets just about up to the Ohio River Valley, but it's not likely to move north of that. So that keeps the southern half of the Eastern Corn Belt in pretty good shape. And then we have another system that's approaching very slowly from the northwest and is going to give the Western Corn Belt a hard time through the middle of next week. It looks like a wet week for Iowa coming up. But it stalls just short of Illinois or northwestern Illinois. It gets into northwestern Illinois about Sunday. And Monday and Tuesday, that system will probably come across the northern third of the Corn Belt and the Eastern Corn Belt. So southern Wisconsin, northern Illinois, Michigan, northern Indiana will probably see some pretty sizable amounts of precipitation during the early part of next week. But there'll be this area in the middle, which looks like it might escape the dangers from the north and the south and get away with mostly dry weather, although we can't preclude a few scattered or isolated thundershowers at times as the moisture improves in the air mass. But basically, I think they've got a chance this week.
A round of disturbances into the beyond the middle of June, or?
Oh, yeah. We're not out of this pattern, Dave. People keep trying to change it into a summer pattern. It isn't happening. It's a very persistent pattern with cold, high pressure over central Canada, maintaining a front further south, and all the action is on this east-west frontal system that keeps varying from the upper Midwest down through the Midwest to the Ohio Valley. And as long as that east-west front is in there, showers and thunderstorms will be moving along it, and low-pressure systems coming out of the southwest will open the door for Gulf moisture, pulling it up into there. So I don't see anything drying out anytime soon.
And temperature variances between the upper Midwest and lower Midwest?
Oh, quite a bit. It's quite cold in the upper Midwest. They had a little frost up in the Arrowhead and a few scattered areas nearby the last couple of days. We're going to see cool temperatures in the northern third, or I call it the northern half of the Corn Belt, this week on balance. And then the south, the temperatures will be a little bit milder, but with all the rain down there, that'll keep it from getting very hot. So let's say call it a cool week. Warmest day will probably be about Monday, but the rest of the week looks pretty cool. First and Saturday, Friday, Saturday, and then again Tuesday through Thursday.
Thank you very much, Peter.
My pleasure.
That is meteorologist Peter Levitt, and that is today's Closing Market Report. Be sure to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49 Central Time for our first in-depth look at the day's markets on AM 580. And you can listen to today's futures analysis and weather reports on the World Wide Web. Go to WILLAG.org and click on the audio analysis tab. This is Dave Dickey.